Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining me for this segment, I have Marcus Cannon, Behavioral Health Services Administrator for Riverside University Health System Behavioral Health, and we're going to be talking about a hot topic, homelessness, and how Riverside County is addressing the homeless problem. So thank you very much for joining me today, Marcus. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate your time.
Okay, now do you have an idea of how many people are actually homeless in Riverside County?
In 2019, the county's most recent annual point-in-time count, which is our annual attempt to survey those who are homeless in the county, counted 2,811 people.
Oh, that's countywide, correct?
That is correct.
Are there different degrees of homelessness?
Certainly. We have those who are homeless a very short period of time. They may have had a job loss, a death in the family, change of income, and may be homeless for very brief periods of time and stay with a family member or stay at an emergency shelter, but they're able to continue to work or return to work and reafford housing. And some of those individuals may never even hit the formal homeless services system, though some do. And then you have individuals who may be homeless either in a shelter setting or on the streets, again, for a medium duration of time, but they have the resources and wherewithal to get things moving again, and they're able to get themselves back into formal permanent housing. And then, unfortunately, we also have those that are what we call chronically homeless, folks who either have been homeless in an uninterrupted fashion for long lengths of time, 12 months or more, or they're episodically homeless. They go homeless for many months and then may end up in hospital, in a nursing home, return to some sort of housing, but something falls apart again, and so they return back to the streets. And this becomes an episodic pattern for them over long durations of time. And those individuals sometimes are those that it's hardest for us to get them connected to services and get them into care and help them return to housing. So they're long answer to short questions, yes, there are definitely different levels of homelessness.
Now, mental health issues, I imagine, play a big part in that, especially with the chronically homeless residents. Do we have a number of how many people fit that category?
That is a difficult question to answer. Anytime we study human beings, you know, it's a complex study to undertake. For those who are chronically homeless, it is more common that they would have either a mental health condition or a substance use condition. Though even there, certainly not 100%. We have those due to high housing costs, maybe personal or family instability, folks who've been injured and have a physical injury that makes it difficult for them to work and maybe only receive a small pension or a small SSI amount that wouldn't cover the totality of their rent, and so they stay stuck in homelessness for long periods of time. So I think it's a overgeneralization to say that all who are chronically homeless have mental health or substance use issues, but certainly we do have some who do.
Right. Now, Riverside County has just been awarded over $23 million in homeless funds. What is the purpose of these funds, and how will these funds be used to help address the problem of homelessness?
The purpose of these funds is to construct permanent supportive housing for those who are homeless or chronically homeless or at risk of chronic homelessness. And then that would be that group of folks who maybe they're housed at the moment. They're in a nursing home or some sort of institutional care setting, but we know that historically they've been homeless off and on for long lengths of time. We want to help that group of people break that cycle and get it back into housing, back connected to a productive life. And so specifically these funds are designed to either build new housing, new affordable housing, or to acquire and rehabilitate affordable housing that needs that rehabilitation in order to stay in the housing stock. And as a part of that, the Department of Behavioral Health here commits to providing supportive services so that those who are coming out of homelessness into housing have the support and care that they need to be successful. And state housing and community development recognizes that there's a need for subsidy to help these construction projects or rehab projects go. And so that's really the goal of the funds, is that they can be used locally for behavioral health departments to work with developers in their area to create more affordable housing. And one of the benefits that some folks may not even realize of these programs is that the loans that come from housing and community development, as in the form of these grant awards, construct not only set-aside units for those who are homeless and have mental health needs, but they'll end up constructing a much larger affordable housing project, and it'll just be a small subset of the units that are dedicated for those who are homeless and have mental health needs. So really, it's a boon to the whole community to gain these extra affordable housing units, especially in a county like ours where the cost of housing relative to wages puts housing out of reach for so many in our community.
Right. Now, where do these funds come from? Are they state allocated funds, or do they come from the federal government?
Correct. It's state funds, and it's a repurposing of Mental Health Services Act money. So it's state money that's already been set aside for mental health uses, but the state has recognized that it can be challenging to provide mental health services to those who are chronically homeless on the streets. And even if the services are provided, if someone doesn't have a safe and stable place to live, it's hard to take good care of your physical health, your mental health, return to work, go back to school, find a job. Any of those things are really difficult if you don't know where you're going to lay your head at night, don't have regular access to clean sanitation, the shower, things like that.
I believe these funds come from the No Place Like Home program. Could you tell us a little bit about that program?
Sure. The No Place Like Home program is a creation of California's Housing and Community Development Agency, and it's really designed to take state money that's a result of tax revenue and to focus it specifically not just on mental health services, but on creating affordable housing for those who have mental health needs and are homeless. And it's a competitive process. There will be multiple rounds, and in the first round, there's four large counties in California that received a direct allocation of funds based on their previous annual homeless point in time counts. And then other than those four, the rest of the 54 counties in California competed for available funds, and they did break those up into small and medium and large county groups. And in our county grouping, there was about $93 million of funds available. And we're really grateful and proud of the work of folks here across our county, our behavioral health department, our housing authority, various other local partners that helped put together a great application package to get this $23 million in funding. We were the largest single award of any of those other 54 counties that had to compete for available money. So we're really excited about the opportunity to produce some more affordable housing here for our county.
Okay, now why is the Department of Behavioral Health involved in addressing the homeless problem, and why not some other county agency?
Well, what I would say is this particular funding was earmarked so that behavioral health was really the natural applicant, because the housing that will be created is set at the No Place Like Home units within this housing are set aside for consumers with behavioral health needs. Obviously, like I mentioned, the developers will use this money to help create a larger affordable housing project. But there are many other housing development projects that happen here within the county that behavioral health is not the primary one. It would be our economic development agency or our county housing authority that would go after those funds to create other types of affordable housing. But behavioral health obviously does have a natural alignment with helping to address homelessness. We know that if you have a significant behavioral health challenge, if you have a significant substance use challenge, it then can be more complicated to keep a job or finish school or take care of some of those other regular activities of daily living. And so our consumers may be at greater risk of ending up homeless. And then once homeless, if you have a behavioral health challenge or substance use challenge, it's even harder to kind of get yourself rehoused. So there certainly is a natural intersection for our department to make sure that those who are homeless, especially if they have a behavioral health challenge or a substance use challenge, that we try to get them connected to care and also do all that's within our power to bring into creation affordable housing so that those consumers can get into housing and really get on their path to recovery.
Okay, great. Now, what is meant by permanent supportive housing? That's a term that comes up. Why is that important, and why is that an important part of the work that you do?
Permanent supportive housing, if I can unpack that a little bit, the supportive part essentially means that it's housing that involves both a rental subsidy in that the person is either going to have the housing at low cost or no cost if they have zero income, And the permanent part essentially says that that subsidy will be as long as the person needs it, so a long-term subsidy. And the other part of that supportive definition is that we will provide case management services, supportive services to help the person be successful in housing. If they've been homeless a long time, they may have developed, you know, habits that worked on the street but don't work well indoors. So we want to help people make that transition back to indoor living and reacclimate and be successful. We don't want people to just have a shell of an apartment. We want them to have a rich life. And it really is important because, again, I think it can be easy for those of us who do have a regular roof over our heads to think, well, why don't people just go get a job and fix this situation? But for someone who doesn't have a roof, that gets really, really complicated really, really fast. If you don't have access to a regular bathroom, a shower, a roof over your head, and if you don't have a place to safely store your belongings, everything that may be near and dear to you is there with you on your back or in your cart. And so if someone says, well, ride the bus to the doctor, it's just a few miles. Well, that bus ride may take an hour, and then wait to see the doctor and then see the doctor and then ride the bus back, and all your stuff or your companion animal is gone when you come back. Pretty quickly, your priority will be keeping your things safe. And so those things that you and I might prioritize move down the priority list for our folks who are chronically homeless. And we see that the longer people are chronically homeless, their health deteriorates, and it becomes more complicated to get back into the workforce, kind of achieve those things that we all would want to achieve. And so housing really sets that stable foundation in order to start to put the rest of the pieces back together.
Okay, now can you give us an example of how the program and services that you provide, how they help someone that's actually out on the streets and being homeless, how does that help them make it into a stable housing environment?
Sure, I'd be happy to. One of the services that we're really proud of is our department offers mobile street-based services of various types, both behavioral health directly, substance use services, as well as these types of case management activities that I talked about. And just to kind of paint a picture on it, what that could look like is our staff, they're in a vehicle, they're paired up as a staff of two, oftentimes a behavioral health specialist and a peer support specialist. These peer support specialists are individuals who themselves have been consumers of the behavioral health department and may themselves have been homeless, but they now have some recovery in their lives and are successful and working again. And we have job opportunities for those folks to essentially give back and contribute to people who are currently struggling and to connect from a true place of relatability to say, you know, hey, I've been there. I've been in this situation. I know what it feels like to be in your shoes. I also know that hope and recovery are possible, and here's what worked for me. Can I help try to help you along that path? And we find that that's really a huge tool in our toolkit to gain rapport with our consumers and motivate them towards recovery. And so these two behavioral health staff would go out together and just approach consumers who are homeless on the street and say, hi, how are you doing today? What do you need? What causes you to be out here? They oftentimes will have a cooler in their car with some cold water, maybe some snacks, just something to sort of start a conversation and say, man, it's really hot out here today. Can I offer you cold water? To which people will almost always say, yeah, sure. And then hopefully over time that leads to a longer conversation about why did the person become homeless and what do they need to fix their situation? And our staff will help them with those even very basic needs people don't think about. But to apply for a job, you might need an ID, but you've lost your ID. And to get an ID, you need a birth certificate. So we help people through all the steps of that process. Let's help you get your birth certificate. Let's help you get your ID. Let's help you apply for a job. Let's get you connected to a doctor. Let's try to get you some dental care so we get your teeth taken care of. You can go in and give that winning smile to a potential employer. And let's get you behavioral health care, substance use services if you need that. And the goal, of course, would be able to get people into housing. In the short term, that might be emergency housing. There are both homeless shelters as well as transitional housing type programs that provide housing for those who are homeless and struggling. And we want to get people into those housing levels, but there's not enough of it countywide. So unfortunately, some people do stay unsheltered on the streets. But even for those individuals, we would continue to go back out, talk with them, try to connect them to all these services. And ideally, through programs like No Place Like Home, we will start to have more and more permanent supportive housing units where we can help people quickly transition from the streets into an apartment of their own and a place where they can then take on all those other activities of going back to work, going back to school, taking care of their health. Our emergency shelters are a vital need. But what people sometimes don't recognize is many of those emergency shelters, folks still have to leave first thing in the morning and be gone throughout the day and then come back in the evening, and they may not be able to leave their belongings behind. So it's still, even if someone is in an emergency shelter, it's not easy to take on all those other tasks of, if you took everything you own to a job interview, your potential employer might kind of look askance at you. So we really do need not only emergency shelter, but this longer-term housing that creates the real stability for our department to try to then do the other work of connecting people back into the, you know, successful lives.
Okay, so let's say someone is on the streets. They want to take a little initiative to get off the streets. What's the procedure? What is the first step they should take?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. Here in Riverside County, we have what's called a coordinated entry system, and our department, the Behavioral Health Department, leads that effort. And really, it's meant as a way to access care. And people can call, even if they don't have a behavioral health need, they just have a housing need, they can call. It's 1-800-498-8847 and say, "Hi, I'm homeless. Here's the part of the county that I live in. How can you help me?" And then the staff that answer that phone number are trained to help the person identify what's the homeless resource closest to them in their area. As you know, we've got a huge county, 7,200 square miles, and there are many, many, many great homeless service providers across the county, not only county agencies, but private providers, nonprofits, faith-based groups that are really doing a lot of work to help end homelessness. And so our staff will help that person who's homeless who wants to take the first step for themselves connect with the closest local resource, and they'll ask them a series of questions to identify what their needs are and figure out, is this just a housing need, or perhaps the person does also have a health care need, a behavioral health need, a substance use need. They need help for some other area of their lives. The staff will try to help connect them to multiple resources that'll help them with this problem. So that, I would say, is really one good first step that someone who's homeless could take. And if they know already those resources in their area, they could go into the local, you know, whether it's homeless shelter, faith-based group that's helping out with homelessness, a DPSS office, Department of Public Social Services, and say, "I'm homeless, I'm struggling, I need help. Can you connect me to resources and care?" We're trying to train as many people throughout the county, both public and private partnerships, in what to say if someone who's homeless comes in. And so that's our goal, is to really extend that network of care, you could say, so that there's a no-wrong-door approach, that sort of wherever someone might go in, that they would get a good answer about what are positive steps that they could take to help themselves forward.
Okay, you know, as we start to wrap things up, is there a website that they can go to get more information? And give us that phone number once again.
We also have the CARES line. This is an access line for those who need or want behavioral health services, and that number is 1-800-706-7500. Similarly, we have a substance use CARES line. The number is 1-800-499-3008. And we have an additional helpline. That's 951-686-4357 or 951-686-HELP. And those are access lines that community members can call if they or someone they love needs help. And we also have a website, which is www.ruhealth.org. And from that site, individuals can navigate to the medical center, the community health centers that we offer throughout the county, our behavioral health department, our substance use services, and our county's public health department. All can be reached from the one web address.
Marcus Cannon, Behavioral Health Services Administrator for Riverside University Health System Behavioral Health. And we've been talking about how Riverside County is addressing the homeless problem and some of the homeless programs that the county has to offer. So once again, thanks, Marcus, for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Stephen.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.